This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Laga.
Yes, the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast is back, and we're here to talk about the game of the season, the UEFA Champions League final between Juventus and Real Madrid. I'm Joe Laga, editor of the FC Yahoo blog, and here with me in the Playa Vista podcasting room is our interim producer who's still producing the podcast while Shahan Ahmed is on his European vacation, Joey Galino.
He's still not back yet? Dang. I want his life.
He's really having the time.
Is getting to go to Europe on a trip like that a perk of producing the podcast for a certain amount of weeks?
You have to get in line, man.
Dang it. All right.
And also here with us is our other resident Arsenal fan, Alex Baker.
Let the record reflect that this is a soccer podcast on the day of the NBA Finals, and we have one Cavs fan and two Dubs fans in the booth today.
We have one defending champion and two guys who root for the Golden State Warriors.
Wait, we're here to talk soccer.
All right.
Let's keep it civil. So, Juventus and Real Madrid will meet for a 19th time in Europe on Saturday in Cardiff, Wales. These massive clubs are trying to accomplish something historic. Juventus can become the 9th team to complete the treble. Real Madrid can become the first ever repeat winner in the Champions League era. It's a pretty classic clash of Juventus's defensive fortitude against Real Madrid's attacking brilliance. We're going to make our listeners wait a while for our predictions, but we'll begin our breakdown with this question. How will the Champions League final be won? And your answer can't be, of course, the most goals or penalties.
I have to rethink my answer then.
I think you got the classic case of, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. And you've got Real Madrid's BBC of Benzema, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Gareth Bale. Well, actually, it might be a BBI.
It might be Isco.
But nonetheless, you've got one of the best attacks in Europe versus Juventus's BBC of Barzagli, Bonucci, and Chiellini, probably the best defense in Europe. Is it as simple as that? Maybe not, but I think it will come down to the attack versus the defense and some other key matchups. You've got Casemiro, who Allegri has identified as the most important player on Real Madrid, who will probably be the man tasked with trying to disrupt Paulo Dybala, who I think is the player that maybe could emerge from this as the greatest potential threat to the Ronaldo-Messi hierarchy.
Yeah, I think Casemiro is the key player in this matchup because a lot of what Real Madrid does is because he is able to plug so many leaks and take care of so many, put out so many fires, so to speak, in the back end, because clearly the attacking talent that Alex mentioned is basically unparalleled in the world when it's in form like this and Barcelona's is out of form, and maybe you could throw Bayern Munich in there. But it's not just those guys. You know, you got creative midfielders in Toni Kroos and Luka Modric who play on the sides, and Modric might have to have a big game. He might be the most important player when all is said and done, trying to break down Juve's defense. And you've also got fullbacks and central defenders. Sergio Ramos is great in the air in the box, like who like to get forward. And because everybody is willing to be a threat, not only can they be a threat, they're willing to be a threat at all 11 positions, well, 10 minus Keylor Navas. You need someone who is kind of a shield and a barrier who protects everything, and that's what Casemiro does. And for all he does in terms of physicality and muddying up play, he does it very smartly. I think he's only got 13 yellow cards across all competitions this season, which is kind of remarkable for a number six. So he's very tricky, and I think there's a reason Allegri pegged him as the guy that they're going to have to be most watchful for, because it's not always about, obviously they're going to have to watch out for Ronaldo. Obviously they're going to have to watch out for Benzema, because the goal scorers kind of get the most pub. But sometimes, tactically, the most important guy can be that number six, as Casemiro has been for Real Madrid a lot of the time this year. And if there's one thing Italians know, it's tactics.
You know, I'm going to give a plug for your matchups post, your key matchups post. I think the one matchup that stands out for me is your Dani Alves versus Marcelo matchup, because that's really the key to how these teams are going to be able to go at each other. And if those guys have an off game or they can really neutralize each other, we very well could have a game which actually plays into Juventus's hands. You know, the more kind of, I don't want to say choppy, but the more that Real Madrid cannot get out on the wing or get the ball to the feet of their playmakers and match winners, that's a positive for Juventus. And that's not to say Juventus is wanting to play for extra time or penalties. It's just that really plays into their hands because they don't want to get in a shootout with Real Madrid. Although Dybala, I think Dybala is really the only guy they have who can really is at that level of being able to really score freely. You know, Real Madrid, take your pick. I mean, even yeah. Marcelo coming off the left wing from left back. But you know, I have a list of things that will kind of
let's hear it.
Won't ultimately won't be just one thing. Well, I think you know you guys brought up Casemiro. I think you know who's the referee. If the referee is going to call the caution Casemiro when he fouls aggressively like he did in the knockout rounds in previous games, you know, that's going to be a factor whether he can actually play physical like he wants to. Gonzalo Higuain, it's a cup final. You know, it's death taxes and missed chances in a cup final for Gonzalo Higuain. But that said, you know, the guy has, 29 goals in all competitions for Juventus.
Yeah,
and maybe a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. But, of course, I'm going to go back to what I've been saying all Champions League, this whole Champions League campaign, is that Real Madrid is going to win because they have more match winners, you know, star power. If it's not Ronaldo, it's going to be Sergio Ramos. You know, well, Sergio Ramos can decide. That's another one of your key matchups, whether he can keep his head or score.
Or red card.
Yeah.
That's right.
Baker's so binary choice.
You know, I think that's kind of a half-assed way to answer the question, but I think there's a combination of things that I think can be in play in how this is going to turn out.
Yeah. And I think another thing that's key is how Zidane decides to line up, because Juve are going to be really tough to break down no matter what. And I think we would all agree that he hasn't said either way whether this is going to happen. But, you know, the question that Alex kind of alluded to, do you start Bale or do you start Isco? And while Bale may be the better all-around player, Isco has been very, very important to Real Madrid's run-in and how hot they've gotten at the end of the season. And, you know, they won La Liga. They're here in the Champions League final. They've played well with him in there. So the question is, do you attack Juventus with him at kind of the top of that midfield formation where he can be a little bit more of a playmaker and play directly at the Chiellinis and the Bonuccis? It might be kind of hard to handle Ronaldo in the air. He's a very tough, very physically imposing guy. So you could go that way, or you could decide to kind of spread them out a little bit and put Isco on the wing in a 4-3-3. So I think his you know, tactically, that's going to be a big decision they have to make. And on the other side, I would be very surprised if Allegri, who has toyed with 3-5-2 versus a 4-4-2 times this year, I would be very surprised if he doesn't have the four across the back, because I don't think it's necessarily a capitulation to say Real Madrid's got a ton of potentially match-winning attacking talent. And if you line up with just three people in the back and maybe try to gum things up in the midfield, that's one thing. But I think you're also kind of leaving yourself exposed very much on the backside and maybe asking a lot of your back three to kind of cover those spaces and things like that, because it's not like Real Madrid has a midfield that slacks. You know, we mentioned it's a very good midfield. So I think those are two things. I think those are the most important things tactically for each manager to consider.
Allegri's being very coy with what his lineup is going to be, what his formation is going to be. We've seen him go to this like really crazy imbalanced formation with five attacking players because his defense is so rock solid.
It's very good
to do that.
Very good.
I think that's really risky against a team with Real Madrid's midfield, because it leaves Juventus just with a two-man midfield effectively. And I know this system works because you've got guys like Mandzukic, who used to be an out-and-out number nine, who's now tracking back as of the left wing back.
Right? How? That's a remarkable transformation.
It's Allegri. You've got to give the guy, I think, more credit than he's. He's not the flamboyant Jurgen Klopp kind of guy, but look what he's done building on what Conte started to take this team to two finals in 3 years and to manage these guys. But I think that'd be really risky for him to start with five forwards this time. He's got to maybe go with something, a safer bet, a 4-4-2 or a, I don't know, 4-3-2-1 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you guys think is the X factors for each side?
Well, I think Casemiro is the X factor for Real Madrid. as I mentioned. And I also think that I would also like to throw in, maybe if I'm giving 100% of this award to someone, I'll give like 90-85 to Casemiro. Also toss maybe 10-15% Luka Modric's way, because it can be very tough to break down Juventus from, you know, passing-wise. They're very good covering space and things like that. But if you can have a moment of magic from a little bit further out, Modric is very capable of providing that, whether with a ball or a shot or something like that. So I'll say him. And then Juve, I'm not going to say it's Higuain, because I think a lot of his struggles, while they have happened in big matches, they've come with the Argentina shirt on, not the Juve shirt on. We'll see if that translates. But I think Dybala really has a chance here. Like you said, he's sort of, even though he doesn't have as many goals this year as Higuain, he's got more assists, he's a little more dynamic, and he's only 23 years old. And he's playing on a big stage like this for arguably the first time in his career, and he wants more call-ups to Argentina. You have so many things like that. And he can be, he's a very quick, very creative, very instinctive player. He's very, very tough to defend, even if you're on your game. And he's scored a bulk of his goals in the latter stages of the Champions League. So he's very in form in this competition. And if Juve is going to play the way I think they will, or at least I hope they will, and try to go at Real Madrid and try to, instead of trying to muck things up, you're going to need to score goals, as simple as it sounds. And I think the guy who's the biggest threat to do that without the help of anybody else, even though they do have other guys who can help, is Dybala. So I'll go with him.
I think for Juve, I'm going to go with Dani Alves, because I think that he's... A, knows the opponent better than anyone else on the team. He's got a lot of experience playing against Real Madrid. He's been in resplendent form on the run-up to this final. And I think will be a factor going forward. And, you know, provided Allegri does go with some lopsided combination formation, he's going to be essential in tracking back and defending too. But I think he knows how to unlock defenses and make things happen. On the other side, this is kind of an obvious choice, but I'm just going to go with Ronaldo, because I think the guy is, out of all the players on the field, even at the age of, is he 32 now, 31?
32, I think, yeah.
Even at the age of 32, he's still the player out there who can consistently prove he can turn a game on his own.
Yeah, and as Shahan would say, he's not slowing down. He gets older, it seems like he's...
kind of reinvented himself sort of late in life as this number nine, predatorial striker, and I think... You know, you put a ball on his head, he's gonna smash it past Buffon. And so, yeah, I'll go Ronaldo and Dani Alves.
I'm going to go back to your point about Isco. You know, even if he doesn't start, whenever Isco gets on the field, that's when Real Madrid is going to be at its best, because he is another guy that really can create havoc for the opposing defense. And you know, why Kylian Mbappe, even though Monaco lost to Juventus, there was, I think in the second leg early on, Mbappe was able to get into tight spaces, kind of disrupt that left side of Juve's defense. And, you know, I think if Isco's on the field, you know, they can easily flip with Ronaldo, put him on the right side, usually operates on the left. But I can see Isco doing the same thing. I can see him, you know, whether he's going to, you know, serve in or just put in crosses or just cut up that side of Juve's defense, which I think is the most vulnerable. And I can see him creating chances whenever he gets on the field. Conversely, for Juve, you know, Alexandro is the guy who's going to have to help. He's going to come up big and help shut down whoever is on the right side, whether it's Bale or whoever's on that wing. So those are my X factors, you know, Sandro for Juve, but really Isco, he could be even more of an X factor, actually. He could be the one who really, really decides it just because of the way he's been playing. I mean, Ronaldo gets all the headlines, but like you said earlier, I think Isco, attacking-wise, has been able to elevate Real Madrid to a new level while Bale has been, you know, dealing with or trying to get back to where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So Shahan Ahmed and Leander Charlakens have debated some topics on video. The first one, and this is a question I'm going to pose to you guys here, is Cristiano Ronaldo could win a fourth Champions League title. If he does win his fourth, what does that mean for his legacy? Does he rise up the mythical all-time great rankings, well, maybe even all the way to the top as the GOAT? I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
I can certainly see how Shahan would think that. No.
For the record, Shahan did say I think he was on the level of Messi. Kind of makes him Messi's equal. And Leander made fun of his Sean's purple shirt
yes, yes.
And said, no.
Only, you can only get that kind of insight from those
from
two.
The Yahoo folks.
I think, all right, if you, Leander, I think, he if he's not here, so he could correct me if I'm wrong, but he posits that Ronaldo is already pretty much the second greatest player of all time outside of Lionel Messi. And I'm sort of inclined to agree with them. As great as Pele and Maradona are, and I hate the fact that when you say someone's better than they are, people automatically default to thinking you're an idiot or you're unappreciative or, you know, you're not old enough to, for whatever reason. But, you know, the fact remains that these guys didn't test themselves against the best competition like Ronaldo and Messi did. And now I'm not necessarily blaming them for that because it's not like, you know, they never shrunk from a challenge. It's just they didn't because the dynamics of the game were different and only started changing really toward the end of Diego Maradona's career. They didn't really get the chance to do what these two are doing right now. But you can't ignore what they're doing. And for Ronaldo, if he gets a fourth Champions League crown, it starts to complicate things for me in terms of who's better between him and Messi. I think Messi is clearly the one right now who's better, but Ronaldo would have been the driving force behind four Champions League titles. He clearly is with these Real Madrid titles. Back when he won for the first time with Manchester United in 07-08, that team was clearly stacked. But he was also the PFA Player of the Year in the Premier League Player of the Year. He was already an incredible talent. And Messi, even though he has four Champions League titles as well, he didn't even make the squad, I don't think, for that first one in 2006 against Arsenal for Barcelona. So I think Ronaldo's he's always been better in the air. He's a more physically imposing player. I think Messi is a more creative player. I think Messi on a given day is more dangerous and he's got more dynamism to him than Ronaldo. And you know, the international thing is a whole other thing, because while Ronaldo obviously now has a European championship to his name and Messi has, you know, got the albatross of Argentina still not having won a major international tournament since 1993, you know, Ronaldo wasn't on the pitch for most of that European final last year. And Messi has had some moments where if Higuain, going back to him, could have converted a chance, then we're having a different conversation. Messi does have at least a Copa America, maybe even a World Cup. So I'm still inclined to lean Messi, even if Ronaldo wins this title. But it is complicating matters for me.
Yeah, it's getting harder to separate them. I used to be pretty much Team Messi all the way. But you can't argue with Ronaldo and his trophies and his big goals in those games where the trophies are won or in the games leading up to them. But I still think I'm leaning towards Messi because I feel like in our current era, he's sort of been the more innovative player. He's really the guy who kind of made people know. No one really knew what a false nine was before Pep Guardiola moved Messi in and stuck him a little bit deeper. And, you know, and not that the false nines have taken over the world since then, but I still think that as far as the way the game has innovated in the last 8 to 10 years, Messi's been at the heart of that. Ronaldo's been a very good player, a very physical player. He worked really hard for it. Messi seems like it's just kind of come sort of natural to him. Like, I don't think he spends like a ton of time at the gym or whatever. I just think, you know, he's a natural genius.
I think it's important to factor in how Ronaldo, how this fourth Champions League title is won. If he's not even a factor and he's on the field, I mean, he gets credit for it. But we remember in 2008, I mean, there was a time where Cristiano Ronaldo, in big moments, could not do anything. I mean, it was with Man United and early on with Real Madrid. So, you know, I think that'll be, you know, look, if he gets a hat trick, I mean,
that's one thing.
That kind of elevates his status little bit, right? Sure, you know, and it's done so in spectacular fashion, which is what we're seeing now. He's on this incredible run, you know, in Europe. But if he's an innocent bystander in
or if he scores a meaningless goal,
rips his shirt off, which is bound to happen.
I mean, look, correct me if I'm wrong. Did he do anything last year other than make the winning penalty kick, which admittedly was big, but wasn't he kind of invisible for a lot of that?
He was, yeah. And that is the knock on Ronaldo, you know. But that could change. I mean, I think what will happen is the question, you know, we'll be answering this question every year, because longevity is going to play a part in this.
Right.
Ronaldo is in. He's a different type of player. He can transition into that number nine goal scorer. And we've talked about this on the podcast. Yep. What is the future position for Lionel Messi? And that's not to say he won't be as great. I think him as a deep-lying midfielder who's pinging passes, he just won't have the goals to show for it. Like, Ronaldo will still be scoring in bunches. And, you know, for the not-so-astute soccer observer, obviously Ronaldo is going to win the argument. But Messi can still be great and have impact on games. He just may not be as great of a goal scorer.
He might be kind of more of a Xavi Hernandez, Andrea Pirlo kind of guy, like a deep-lying guy who can put a ball anywhere and can still score from deep and can still take immaculate free kicks. But, yeah, he might not be making the dramatic runs into the box and the dribbles to eight guys or,
And it's going to – you're also going to have to see real quick, just tie a bow on this, is you're going to have to – he's going to have to change his game a little bit. It's not just as simple as dropping back and passing more. You know, he's going to have – he's going to have to up his work rate because Iniesta works tirelessly to get the ball back when he doesn't have it. And there's just little things he's going to have to do. And I also think one other thing that factors into the Ronaldo-Messi debate, it's kind of funny, they're both aloof in their own ways. Like, Ronaldo is kind of like this golden god, seemingly chiseled, with his muscular figure and how much, how unattainable his physique and his ability seem. And then Messi, on the other hand, is kind of the guy working IT over in the corner,
He's like just this freak at the Y. He doesn't look like anything. Quiet guy. Yeah. And then he just lights you up.
Neither one of them are eminently relatable because Messi, doesn't really like the press. He doesn't really like people, it seems. He's kind of a quiet guy. So I think the personality of the two also informs who you think is the better player.
Here's one question, though. Is it a knock on Messi that Ronaldo has done this with two clubs and two leagues? Do you think that that's something that you can hold above Messi, that he's only been a one-club, one-league guy, basically?
I don't think so, because I think that La Liga has been the best league in the world for at least the deepest for a number of years, and I think there's numbers, the UEFA coefficients to back that up. And I also think I would go back to what you hinted at earlier. It's the paradigm shift that Messi is going to be remembered for more than, Ronaldo's a great player, but we've kind of seen him before. Messi, I'm not entirely sure, people love to just say, oh, diminutive Argentine who can score goals. That doesn't mean he's the same guy as Diego Maradona. I think that he was kind of the spearheader of a paradigm shift more than Ronaldo was.
We're all in agreement that, what they're doing in Europe is way more important than or outweighs what they might do for their national teams. But, Leander's point about Maradona and Pele, being greater, right, because of the World Cups that they won. Do you think that is relevant to, or will that be the tiebreaker between Messi and Ronaldo? Let's say Messi's led Argentina to the last three straight tournament finals. Fortunately, Gonzalo Higuain can't bury chances.
But sorry, Pepita. Sorry, we don't mean to go in on you.
Yeah, there's not the Higuain's the family doesn't listen to this podcast. Federico and Columbus isn't listening.
We still have you at Arsenal, Gonzalo. Yes,
absolutely,
we still have you.
But that could sway it. I think if Messi finally, or I still think Messi's, for me, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. Because of all the things he can do, people said he couldn't score with his head. So what does he do? He goes and scores with his head in the Champions League final, right?
Yeah.
Against United. Yeah. So, I think he's amazing. They're amazing in their own ways. I put Messi an inch higher, or maybe a couple inches higher, because he makes everyone better.
Yeah.
And I value that more than the spectacular chiseled athlete who looks like, the cover boy. He could be the cover boy of soccer for decades, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that what Pelé did with Brazil, he played with how many great players? He played with tons. And, they won the three World Cups in the four World Cup stretch. Messi basically does that every year with Barcelona. He plays with great players. There's absolutely no denying that. But you know, they're always in the mix. They're in the conversation. This year, they got to the final eight of the Champions League, and it was an abject disaster. That tells you how high the standards are, because that's partially what they've set for themselves over the past decade. And so now what he does at club level is basically all-time great and impossible to replicate. So now you're asking him to replicate it with lesser teammates in Argentina? Yeah. Like, I don't think that's fair at all whatsoever. I don't think that you can really hold that against him. Now, again, you know, you said, you made the point about if Ronaldo has a hat trick in the Champions League final, it's going to kind of go a long way toward determining this argument. And by the same, I agree with that. And I think by the same logic, let's say Ronaldo wins the Golden Boot and scores two goals to lead Portugal to the World Cup next summer. Then you're complicating things a little bit. Yeah. But short of that, I think that Messi is kind of set apart for those reasons that I mentioned.
Yeah, I'm still
leading. Well, I'm keeping. Let's make sure we're keeping score here. We all think Messi.
We all think Messi.
All think Messi. Yeah,
yeah, I think so. I think
but it's still TBD. All right, enough Messi versus Ronaldo debate. We got to give our predictions, guys, for this Champions League final. Joey, you're going to go first. You're going to give your winner, the score, and whether it's going to be done in normal time, extra time, or penalty shootout.
I've picked against Real Madrid, I think, the last two times they've been in the final of the Champions League, and that hasn't helped me very much. So I'm nothing if not stubborn. I think Juve is going to win this match 2-1. I think that their defense is going to break at one point, but for the most part, they're going to keep – they don't have as much talent as Real Madrid, but they do have – they can play a more complete game when called upon, and I think this is kind of their moment to do that. I think that Dybala will show well. I think that let's give Ronaldo the benefit of the doubt. I think he finds a way to score because, like you said, he has become more known for showing up on big occasions recently. But I just think that when Juve fortify, they are really tough to beat and really tough to break down. And I think that this being different from a two-legged, you know, quarterfinal, semifinal, you get one chance. And I would really like to take the team with the steel, if maybe not the experience, to be able to do that. And I think it happens in regulation, and I think Juve wins 2-1.
Alex?
I'm gonna mainly agree with Joey on this. So I'm going to go Juventus. And I think that we've seen over the last couple of legs of this tournament how they can shut down some of the best. They shut down Barcelona and Monaco, two of the best attacking teams that were in the competition.
They just shut
Barcelona
them down.
Didn't score.
Yeah. They shut Barcelona
That's insane.
Out.
Yeah.
They shut them out. And they were limiting Barca to these shots from outside the box. You've never seen Barcelona trying to take these pot shots like that. So, yeah, I think that the team that lost the final 2 years ago has improved greatly. A lot of it is maybe the mentality as well as, you know, losing players, but signing players that fill in those positions. And I think that the Real Madrid do score, but I'm going to also go 2-1 Juve.
And both of you guys are in regulation and in normal time?
I think normal time, yeah.
Normal time?
I think it might take extra time. Go extra time. Yeah, okay. Just so I differ with Joey somewhat.
Okay.
I can see it going that way. Yeah.
I'm sticking to my guns. I've said Real Madrid pretty much from the beginning. Because of the aforementioned reasons, you know, more match winners. But I think Isco is going to be the one who plays the biggest role. And I can see him even, if not, it's him generating the winning goal. He's going to score it. And I think it's going to be a frustrating game for Real Madrid. As much as we want this to be an exciting game, I think Juve pretty much will be able to frustrate Madrid. And it'll be a choppy game. But I think in the end, yeah, I can't see Real Madrid not coming away with. I don't know my Spanish. I took French, but you know they're 12th.
The
douzième, right? Yeah. Douzième
is
that 12th? 12th, yeah.
Oh,
douzième yeah. Title. So, yeah. Real Madrid. It'll be a very unattractive game, but it'll be 1-0 Real Madrid in regulation. So. Let's transition from European soccer to international football, namely the Under-20 World Cup in South Korea, where the United States, if you haven't been keeping track, has won its group and won its round of 16 game in impressive fashion today, or this morning, by routing New Zealand 6-0. Tab Ramos' side now will face Venezuela in the quarterfinals. That's Sunday, 2 a.m. Eastern time. That's Saturday night, 11 o'clock here on the West Coast. But the real reason I'm bringing this up is because the hype train has already left the station and is gaining steam. around a 17-year-old redheaded striker from St. Louis by the name of Josh Sargent. He has scored 4 goals in the U.S.'s 4 games. He had 2 in their opening win. And, guys, this kid is special. I know we are quick to anoint our young soccer stars, put them on a pedestal. I'm not including Freddie Adu. But what's most special about this kid is that he's poised. You know, his breakout began for the U-17s earlier this year in the CONCACAF Championship, and he was called up by Ramos for the U-20s, goes straight into right up top into the starting 11, and has looked like he's belonged right from the beginning. It's not so much, you know, his goal scoring is getting the attention because he does so in such, you know, spectacular ways, but again, it's the poise. The kid, when he comes back and gets the ball, it is not an unused or unproductive touch. He is putting the ball in his space to continue the buildup. He's strong enough to do the hold-up play that Tab Ramos needs out of his number 9. And I'm already ratcheting up the hype here.
Yeah, you're annoying him.
We're already moved on from Pulisic, huh?
Yeah,
chosen one.
But, you know, this kid is reportedly, a week ago, he was reportedly to have a deal in place with Werder Bremen. But now Werder Bremen has said already this week that there's no way they can sign him because bigger clubs are already, you know, falling over themselves trying to sign Josh Sargent. So I don't even have a question for you guys, but what is the ceiling for somebody like this? Is there someone what we've seen in this modern era of U.S. youth in men's national team? Have you seen a kid like this before?
I think the ceiling is incredibly high, and I think it's because ever since the U.S. qualified for the World Cup again in 1990 for the first time in, 40 years, and won the bid for the 94 World Cup, and people talked about how soccer would change in this country forever. You know, they weren't talking about overnight. They were talking about a renewed commitment to it at all levels. And I think now that we're about a generation maybe removed from that, a couple generations, depending on how you define it, now you're starting to see the benefits of that. You're starting to see more kids are playing. We're getting more athletes in at the young levels because a lot of people say, you know, at the youth levels of any sport, you don't really have great players in that sport. You just have great athletes. But if those athletes stick with it, then they can show the kind of composure and the kind of deftness of touch and the ability to finish that Josh Sargent has. And so when you say what the ceiling is, when you ask what the ceiling is for him, I think it's pretty high. And I think it depends on the situation because, you know, when we've seen American players go abroad before, let's just stick to some of the big names. I think Lyon Donovan had a tryout with Bayern Munich, right?
And that's,
he was at Leverkusen at 17. And,
yeah.
And got homesick, yeah. Basically.
And so, like, every situation is different. And it kind of depends on your situation because – if Sargent's maybe cut from a different cloth and wouldn't mind taking a chance like that, then if he finds a good situation, then, you know, I think that'd be great for him. Christian Pulisic is in about the best situation you can be because you could argue Borussia Dortmund is better than any club in the world at developing their young talent no matter where it comes from. So he's in a very good situation right there. On the other hand, I'm not sure a club like Werder Bremen, with all due respect to them, would be the best place for someone from the United States that's this good to kind of try to ply their trade. So maybe he goes the Jordan Morris route and says, I'll play in MLS. I'll see, you know, Europe can wait kind of if I'm that good and I prove myself over here, then I can take a chance and go somewhere else. You know, so I think it's all about the infrastructure and because I don't think any one case is the exact same as another. And if Sargent can find the right situation for him, then the ceiling could be incredibly high. We could be talking about the first, you know, American striker who leads the line for a side that is going deep into the Champions League and is kind of the main player to feature for them. So I think that his talent is massive and his potential is massive, and it all depends on, you know, applying it in the right place.
Alex, do you think this is, you know, Sporting Kansas City owns his MLS homegrown rights, but he's already had, you know, since last October, he's had trials with PSV in Holland and Schalke.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, we're going to give Josh Sargent career advice here.
Josh.
What do you, if you're in his shoes, and obviously playing time is the most important thing.
Sure.
So what do you think would be the best league and club for him?
Well, he's got to choose carefully, because I think that for a player of this talent, you got to go and play, as you were saying. But you got to go and play against the best players in the best league that you can reasonably get. And I think that, as the show's one of the show's resident MLS defenders, I don't know if that's Major League Soccer. And we don't want to go see him get stuck on the bench at some big club. So, Joey mentioned Dortmund. He had a trial with Schalke. He had a trial with PSV.
Yeah.
That's the kind of level I see him at. Like maybe sort of a second-tier Bundesliga club or maybe a top Eredivisie club would be a pretty good place where he could get some minutes and learn the way that the game is played at the highest level. So yeah, I'd love to see him at not at PSV, but at Ajax, of course. or as at Alkmaar, where Josie had a couple good seasons there.
Well, Ajax is going to lose their talent, right? So they need some
openings. They just signed Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, but once the big boys come, they'll need some reinforcements.
Is it crazy to think that Josh Sargent, if he continues his crazy career arc, could be in the mix for the senior team within? I mean, I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not talking Russia 2018, but crazier things that have happened.
We saw Pulisic come out of nowhere and start games in Copa America. So,
and it's not like there is some what we call depth at the forward position in the U.S. MNT pool. Obviously, there's Josie Altidore, Clint Dempsey, Bobby Wood, who's back, and Jordan Morris. I can easily see him cracking that group if he can't go anywhere until he turns 18, which is in February. So, he's got his development will be here for the time being. But if he just continues his breakout or just this crazy arc that he's on in Europe, is it crazy to think that? Well, I'm going to say it's crazy for him to consider him in the mix for Russia 2018, but past that, I think it's definitely conceivable to see him, getting some time with whoever the new manager is going to be. Especially the U.S. team's going to have, they're going to be in that transition, right? Clint's going to be gone. You think Josie's going to stick around? But what if there's a new manager who wants to start something new and fresh and younger talent?
That's why I don't think you can ever say that the World Cup is not the most important thing. It is by far for any international program. However, I think something that might be a better indicator of the United States going forward is the Gold Cup the year following the World Cup, because that's the kind of competition where you can say, the U.S. has lost the main year Gold Cup, the last couple times, so it's not like it's going to be anything new if it does, and I'm not saying you don't want to win it, but that's a good time to maybe tinker with things a little bit and say, Sargent, Morris up top, Pulisic out wide, you fiddle with formations like that, because by then you're talking about him, Sargent, being 19 and some of these other guys having a little more experience under their belts. So I agree, he's probably not in the mix for Russia 2018, but I think that the referendum on him as a future leader of the line for the U.S. could come a lot sooner than people think. And his trajectory would certainly suggest as much.
I don't know. Russia 2018 does seem like a tall order, but I'm not going to say it's
because Bruce is. I think the group that's being called in right now for these next
that's going to be.
This is Bruce's squad. Bruce is here. Yeah. He's already. These are the players he can trust. Although Matt Hedges was finally brought in, he's going to get a look.
Right,
really deserves it. But I think this is the group that's going to. These are the pool of players he's going to choose from if the U.S. qualifies for Russia.
And it should be because, maybe we'll talk about this in leading up to the U.S. matches in future podcasts, but I'm a little I'm not as relaxed as everyone else is. You don't get a result against Trinidad and Tobago. You draw that game. Then you're going to the Azteca. Like, it's not – everything's not okay because of one huge win at home against Honduras
round, right? U.S. didn't get 6 points for beating Honduras 6-0.
Yeah.
He only got 3 points. Yeah. look, I'm going to step aside while you guys discuss the big Premier League news of the week, which was Arsene Wenger accepted the 2-year contract to remain as Gunners' boss. And I'm just letting you guys talk about provide your thoughts. I think we all saw Piers Morgan's thoughts about the decision. I mean, are you guys okay with Arson sticking around for two more years?
I think it's the height of hypocrisy for him to chastise the fans for not being with the club, quote unquote, or rallying to support the club no matter what. When, you know, and the way he defends it is saying, well, we all want what's best for the club. Well, if you really want what's best for the club, an objective analysis, taking emotion out of it, would say you have to leave because now you're out of the Champions League. Things have steadily gotten worse for Arsenal. And really, all those fourth place finishes, you can now look back and say, well, that wasn't really Arsenal so much, you know, being great as it was maintaining its okay status quo while the other teams, you know, you'd see like, Manchester United was a power, and then when Sir Alex leaves, they drop out of the Champions League consistently. Chelsea, as I wrote about when they won the league title, kind of the pendulum swings back and forth in and out of the Champions League. Now, if you have stability under Conte, under Guardiola, under Jurgen Klopp, at three major clubs like that, now you're kind of talking, and it certainly looks like Tottenham's not going anywhere. Arsenal has to get better. And I don't think retaining Arsene Wenger means the club is getting better. And if he's talking about going out and spending a ton of money in the transfer market, trying to bulk up the team, and if there's any truth to the names that we've seen linked there so far, you know, a young player for Belgium here, a token young striker there that no one's ever heard of, that's not going to get the job done. So I don't think that this is good. I think that it's a reaffirmation that the club only cares about the bottom line. You know, I guess everyone deserves a chance. So we'll see how the team improves or tries to strengthen in the summer. But just on the surface, I don't like the move at all.
I think there's three stages to an Arsenal signing a new contract with Arsene Wenger. Anger, denial, and acceptance.
Where are you in that?
Moving into the third stage where you start to do that sort of Wenger math that every Arsenal fan will sort of get. Oh, well, we signed a halfway decent left back, and we won the FA Cup, and you know we finished this maybe with just a few more signings. So you kind of go through those emotions with yourself, and you get yourself psyched up. But at the same time, Thomas Tuchel just left Borussia Dortmund.
Yep.
And that's another. How many other great coaches that would be perfect for our? You know, we could have had Jurgen Klopp. We could have had Pep Guardiola at one point. Would have come to Arsenal. Thomas Tuchel is the perfect guy to take that club to in a different direction. And we're not going to wind up with him coaching Arsenal. So, you know, yes, we won the FA Cup. It was a very satisfying victory because we beat Joe's newly crowned Premier League champions.
I know.
You know, it's a lot better than beating a Hull.
Right.
You
know, I was not that torn up about it, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. My ultimate point about that is not to rain on the parade because it was a lot of fun to watch that game. It was a lot of fun to have success in that big moment. But when 10-man half-speed Chelsea – nearly beats you in a club final where you're clearly playing as well as you have all year. It's kind of a big indictment on where the clubs stand at this point.
I feel bad for you guys because, you know, even before the red card, Arsenal was the better team. Chelsea came out flat, but that's their fault. Arsenal was creating chances right off the get-go and they scored early. Here's a situation that I'm just going to throw out there, a hypothetical. What if Arsenal starts next season is so poorly? They're just awful. Because I think this is the time that they needed to make the change. This is the time, you know, you're going to give a manager, the new manager, his own transfer window or to do whatever the board tells him to do. And now, you know, it could be the same thing. It could be Groundhog Day again. You guys would be on this roller coaster up in these ups and downs where you think, oh, Arsenal's going to turn around. And they have this rough patch, and you're fighting to stay or finish fourth. So my first question is, can Wenger survive anything now? His streak of making Champions League, you know, bringing Champions League football to Arsenal, that's done. And we all thought that was the one thing, you know, the one thing that would get him out of his out of the job. But apparently, it's not. You know, it's
the Arsenal board is like, I hate to be political, it's like the Trump base, and it's kind of unshakable. I mean, you hear the rumor that these terms for this contract were agreed as far back as November, so it didn't really.
They were set. They were like matter. They were happy.
I think they're waiting for a happy day to tell people that he signed. So the FA Cup provided the occasion, but I don't think that there was ever any doubt that he was going to stay. I think he can.
But I'm going to bring up Ryan Bailey's argument, which, as he said in one of his videos, is look at all the other clubs that haven't had anything close to this run of success. And I'm not talking about the 2004 Invincibles, just being able to finish top four and have Champions League football. You know, Ryan's a Wimbledon supporter, so he's he doesn't have – his club doesn't have these aspirations. But, you know, Arsenal's a big club. You guys should be acting like a big club. You should be buying players like a big club.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people posed the question to me on Twitter, you know, what if Arsenal wins the Europa League? But, yeah, that's nice. That's a trophy in the cabinet. But at a time when Arsenal should really be challenging for the Champions League and the Premier League, is winning the Europa League, is that progress?
I don't think so.
I don't really think it is.
I think
for Man United, it is.
And it's like, well, do you want to be in that position? Like, I'm not sure. That's a question you have to ask yourself. And I just think to the ultimate point, there's enough talent on its day in Arsenal right now to beat anybody in the Premier League. That's not the issue, though. The issue is you have to have 38 of those days. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that this team has – a bunch of these players have that kind of grit and that kind of wherewithal to get the job done over the entire course of a nine-month season. And
but is that all down to the playing style? If you replace Arsenal with Juventus and Arsene Wenger is manager, can he steer that team through, you know – Is it the playing staff or is it the manager?
I think that playing style would be more suited to win in other leagues. In the Premier League, dribble the ball all the way into the net. That just doesn't get it done.
Or anymore. Is it Stan Kroenke's fashion sense? I mean, what is that? What is that suit that he was wearing?
None of your teams
like a 1920s party after the games.
None of your teams are winning right now, Stan. There's a common thread there. Just saying.
All right, we got to end it there. Please, I know we say this every podcast, but please subscribe on iTunes or SoundCloud,
Audio Boom
for subscribe to the FC Yahoo podcast and leave a review that helps raise a profile of the podcast. For Joey Galino, Alex Baker, I'm Joe Lago. Enjoy the Champions League final, and we'll talk next time. Thanks for listening.